Welcome to the 109th episode of Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week our topic is God Loves, Man Kills by Chris Claremont. And now, the cast begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another lovable episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast, because apparently we're gods and we love. But it would be killable, because we're men. Anyway, my name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week we read God Loves, Man Kills. It's a graphic novel, not a trade, not a collection, not a miniseries, but straight up graphic novel from 1982 by Chris Claremont, drawn by Brent Anderson. And, yeah. What did you guys think of this one?
I actually like this one a lot out of what we've read so far. I enjoyed it far more. But then again, we've read Days of Future Past, and I kind of panned that one. So.
Yes. What about you?
I liked it. It was good.
It was cool. I was a little nervous at first when I read the first couple pages, and it was like, hey, look at these mutants. Let's murder them. I was like, this is fucking hardcore. Like, it's a rough opening.
Yeah, I mean, children get shot and then strung up on a swing.
And it's like labels them muties, right?
Muties. Dirty mutants.
And you know what? At first, I was like, wow, this is super heavy handed. I don't know how comfortable I am going to be with this. But then, like, the comparison for mutant hatred and racism, like, went from not subtle to straight up overt really quickly. In this comic?
They were like, hey guys, this is what this is about.
Like when, what was it, when Sprite or Ariel or Shadowcat or whatever the hell her name is.
Kitty Pryde.
When Kitty Pryde was getting in a tussle and she told him, oh crap, what the hell's a dance teacher's name?
Stevie...
Hunter?
Hunter, yeah. I was going to say Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wasn't Stevie Wonder. They have a similar haircut.
What did she say, like, What if they said damn nigger lovers or something?
Yes.
And then she shed a single tear. You know, I actually felt that kind of drove the point home well, though, because that's something someone would actually say if they were in Kitty's position. I found it believable that Kitty could be like, well, you're just saying it's okay because it's not targeted at your specific minority.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think it's a terribly unfair comparison. It is about racism.
Yeah. And I think Kitty Pryde is a good voice to use there because, who is it, Colossus says something like, oh, don't mind her, she doesn't know what she's saying, or he tries to, like, do the polite thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Kitty Pryde's all of 13, 14? She's not going to have that filter. She'll just say fuck it and say whatever. Like, it's good that she's that mouthpiece because if somebody else said it, he'd be like, well, that's a little out of place for Colossus to say. He's usually quiet and poignant.
And I think at this point in the comic, she's still a pretty new character, right?
Yeah, it seems like it. Well, she's still taking dance classes.
She's still a kid.
Adults don't take dance classes.
Never.
I'll take your word for it, Andy. So yeah, I was going to say something.
Words, they're almost there. They're almost there. But yeah, it's really... The one thing that I was thinking when they were calling her Ariel, and she, like, this is when she has her green costume, right? Like, she looks like, and she has, like, the green makeup on her eyes.
She kind of looks like a clown a little bit.
Yeah. It's really hard to make a new character, guys.
I wish they just didn't have to give her a dumb code name, because Kitty Pryde is a really good character name.
Yeah, but you need a good code name, even if it's, like, really overt, like Professor X. Like, I'm amazed nobody figures that one out, right? Charles Xavier has a school where he's a professor. This guy over here is named Professor X.
Well, it's not as if he wears a costume.
Yeah, I know, but, like, people... Well, no, isn't it, like, people but he's don't not assume like, they're the same person?
No, I don't... But he doesn't, like, go out into battle. He doesn't roll up into battle with them.
He roll.
Emphasis on the roll. Well, he doesn't, but I think that's why. Because he's in a wheelchair and it doesn't make sense for him to go try to fight. You don't see Oracle fighting bad guys.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, his powers lay elsewhere. And I think it's also an issue that could really, really hurt people. maybe worse than Wolverine if he didn't control himself.
Remember in the recap issue we read? It was like the issue after Jean Grey's death. At the beginning of the trade last week.
Yes.
They talk about Professor X like being the shadowy figure in the background. Like, yeah. He kind of watches them but doesn't...
The shadowy puppet master.
Yeah. He doesn't roll up into battle.
No, I mean, Jen's got a point, too, right? Like, if he's in the Mahita battle, and he has a moment where he's, finding it hard to control himself, he could, turn everybody there into, coma puddles.
What? Coma puddle sounds like the worst thing to be.
That's what happens when one of the Wonder Twins turns into a bucket of water and slips into a coma.
Form of water bucket coma. What? Oh, no!
But anyways, we're like going down.
They'll say different things and then don't realize. Of course, that one of them would say form of coma is perfectly normal. Sorry, I'm only making myself laugh here.
Okay, so what were we talking about?
Racism. Effective?
Racism so, okay. as a theme with so X-Men.
You were talking about how Kitty is like, it starts out heavy-handed and becomes overt, but I think it's appropriate in this comic because it's not, that's what this is about. So why not just get it out in the open right away and be like, hey, we're talking about racism here and how a charismatic, there's so many parallels to real life stuff in this comic. I mean, there's a charismatic leader who is calling for genocide.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty familiar. And I think that's why it's really good that Magneto is in this with them too, because he's a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah. I mean, there's one of the things that I think really makes it work for me is that the religious leader is so fervent, and everything that he says, I mean, if you accept the premises of what he's saying, everything he says sort of makes logical sense in a weird way, which is why I think his brainwashing works. I'm not saying that he's right in any sort of fashion, but he says, look, we're Homo sapiens sapiens. This is Homo sapiens superior. This is a different race. This is not humanity. This is not something that came from God. God gave Earth humans in his image. This is not human. We can do whatever we want to these people. We should cleanse the world of this terror.
But see, okay. But that's the logic that people use to affirm slavery mm-hmm. against African people from the African continent, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't look like the white people from Europe who thought that they were made in God's image. So these people mm-hmm. who didn't look like them couldn't be of the God creator of white people. So they could do whatever they want to these things. I mean, they go out and hunt deer and whatever to eat. So it's all the same, right? So
yeah, and at that point in Earth's development, we didn't know the difference between... We didn't know that just because something doesn't... that they weren't white didn't mean that they weren't also Homo sapiens sapiens, right? So from that perspective, it really is almost the exact same argument. Because they probably did figure it. These people are so drastically different in appearance from us, they must not be the same species.
I mean, it's not just that, too, because that sort of basis is... It's the very scary idea that you can oppress people because they're lower than you. But this is the added-in fear that mutants are a threat because they are higher than you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that kind of calls on some themes that you see happening pre-Holocaust, pre-World War II, where people were saying, the Jews control our banks, the Jews control Hollywood, the Jews control this and this and this. And while a group of people did have power, it wasn't, some evil scheme, but, you know, Hitler played on people's fears about that. And then, even now... I think that this was in what year?
82.
So I kind of like the theme that this one presents, your fervor can get you into a lot of evil places because it hits on what a lot of people were saying about gays right before the election this year, mm-hmm. They'll ruin your families, they're evil, they're freaks, they'll... destroy your marriage. And it's mutants aren't messing with people, just like gays aren't. They're not doing anything. They just want to be left alone to do their thing. And
just want to go to fucking dance class, guys.
Yeah, seriously. And it's kind of a horrible mix because it's not just these people aren't human, therefore we can feel okay about attacking them and hurting them. It's they threaten us, so we should attack them and hurt them. Ugh. X-Men world is like dark world.
Yes. But I mean, it's also... Okay, so that's... One of the big things in this is obviously racism, but one of the things that I've been noticing while we've been reading X-Men and a lot of the other Marvel stuff, it's that the common almost defense is when they, like when somebody says, I don't remember who said in this one, I think it was the Reverend, says, how are we common folk to defend ourselves against them? How are we normal people are supposed to defend ourselves against the mutants? You know, and this comes up in the Marvel movie too, like in Avengers, when Nick Fury says, of course we had to use the Hydra weapons. We have to defend ourselves against you types. And I'm just like, I mean, here they use it for persecution, and in the movies they were going to use it as an excuse to build a weapon of mass destruction. But, like, to me that doesn't feel like a valid source of persecution for any kind. Because, I mean, just because somebody is stronger than you doesn't mean that you have to conjure up some greater defense against them. Like, if I go walking along Jersey Shore next to all those buff douchebags, my first thought isn't going to be I have to think of some way to fight them and defeat them in battle. You know, like, I understand but how it works when you read it. Threatened
by them.
Yeah,
this depends guy, on how drunk they are.
He feels threatened by the mutants.
Well, what's silly is being a mutant in some cases is a huge disability. Like, Scott Summers has to wear rose quartz glasses, or else I think he's blind, and he kills everybody that he.
Well, I think if he doesn't have the glasses, whenever his eyes are open, it automatically just floods his field of vision with optical blast, or he closes his eyes, and then he's blind.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would not count that as a strength, necessarily. It's scary, but it's not the same.
And I don't know, I think the first X-Men movie did a good job of showing how almost every person that has a mutation like this probably occurred or probably came into some traumatic event, right? Like when Rogue is just sitting there kissing the boy, all of a sudden he's almost dead, you know? And like Scott Summers, imagine when he first started getting optic blasts, just randomly sitting there in class, boom, the wall is gone.
Well, remember there's a scene in the Wolverine movie, I know it's not the greatest movie, but there's a part in the Wolverine movie where Sabretooth is trying to catch teenage Cyclops, and he knocks him down, and he falls, and he, like, opens, his eyes are open, and he, like, cuts this hallway in half with his optic blast, because he doesn't know what to do.
I mean, but there's, I mean, even if it just happened while he was walking around in class, and Sabretooth wasn't trying to run after him and catch him, like, whenever your powers manifest, there's got to be, most of the time, there's probably some huge traumatic event associated with it. And it probably helps, it's probably also what makes them build community so well, you know? Because they all have that shared moment that they can fall back upon, and they know that everybody else there had that moment too.
Yeah.
Like the, oh dear God, I'm killing everybody. What the fuck is going on here? Unless you're like Shadowcat and all you do is just walk through a wall.
Well, yeah. I mean, she has problems later. Like, I could not find it. I was looking for this. There's a great drawn-out depiction of her relationship with Colossus. And it's like, you know, a timeline. And it starts at like, you know, he's an adult, she's a child. He's dead, she's a bullet. She's incorporeal and can't be material. And he's always metal. Like, it's... Her life isn't easy either. So... I would not want to be a mutant. Would you?
I think it depends on the power. I'd be fine being Wolverine.
Maybe.
Right, I mean, the adamant claws are inconvenient, but like...
You can choose when to use them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, are you saying you want to be Wolverine or have Wolverine's powers?
I would want Wolverine's powers.
Because being Wolverine would...
No,
suck.
Being Wolverine would blow. But I would not mind having an insane healing factor and practically living forever. I think that'd be cool.
I feel like I could be Storm, but what would actually happen is I would somehow destroy the world's weather patterns without knowing it and feel horribly guilty that I've killed off humanity.
Like the butterfly effect, but tenfold.
Like make it nice one day and actually just destroy Earth or something.
What about you?
of all the X-Men, see, there's a ton of X-Men. Some of them have, like, really useful abilities. Like, if you guys know about the X-Men Cypher.
Uh-uh.
He can just speak any type of language.
That's fucking
that's
sick.
Useful.
Not just, like, human languages, but, like, computer languages and stuff.
That's
any
fucking
form
awesome.
Of communication he can master.
Okay,
like,
I take that one.
Easily.
Dude, you'd be the best paid programmer ever. You could sit there and dictate code to the computer.
The problem is, though, like, he's not that great of an... He could not... Sometimes he's not a very good X-Men, because what... You're, like, in a battle with the Purifiers or something. What do you do?
Try to talk them down?
Yeah.
In whatever language.
Yeah, I mean, there's some mutations that are really good. There's some that are... I think the ones that seem to be, like, the worst are the secondary mutations.
Like Beast and his...
Or Nightcrawler, right?
Yeah.
Nightcrawler's power is to teleport, and then he looks like a blue guy.
Like a blue demon.
Yeah.
See, and then there's some that only exist probably because it's X-Men and it's an action comic, like Iceman. There wouldn't be any convenient functionality to that. Right?
Well, he can just create...
Ice cubes?
He can create ice and control ice and water, right? Kind of. He can turn it on and off, and he doesn't look different.
Yeah. You can make really cool ice sculptures.
Or like Pyro. He can control fire, right?
Yeah, but he can't even make it. He's like the fire version of Iceman, but crappier.
Yeah, but he's not that bad. Like, in the movie, he just carries around a lighter.
Yeah.
And he's not limited to the little flame. He just needs a little bit of fire to make it crazy. Speaking of the X-Men movie, this kind of... I think X-Men 2 is kind of based on this comic.
Yeah, I think it is, definitely. What do you guys think about the change in the movie making it from Stryker being a religious leader to a military leader?
That probably had to do with making the movie more appealing.
Yeah.
Not appealing, but acceptable to a wider audience.
Not offending, like, a bunch of...
Because in the comic, it's clear that, like, they state that he's an evangelical...
Yeah, he's a televangelist.
Yeah, and that could be offensive to televangelists.
Well, my grandfather was in the military. Stryker is offensive to me. Why is the military always evil?
The military in general isn't evil, though.
Yeah, but...
But see, the problem is this...
Religion in general isn't evil.
But this makes religion look evil. That doesn't make the military look evil, because I think people... Especially at the time when the movie came out, and nowadays, people have... a lot more respect for the military than they did, say, at the beginning of the 70s during the Vietnam War. Right?
Yes.
I think
or
it's
in the 80s here.
It's an issue of belief, too, because the military doesn't have a core belief that they're basing things on to kill mutants. It's like one guy saying, I'm gonna do this. Whereas this guy, the Reverend, is saying, this is the Bible saying this, and that's too general to translate to a movie audience. There's also,
yeah,
I think, been more recent tension where if you attack an evangelical, there are people who get really up in arms saying our faith is being attacked. Whereas nobody says, you know, of the evil general.
The military industrial complex is getting
attacked. Yeah.
Even though this really isn't about religion.
Not at all.
It's about racism, and he's using religion as the...
As his rationalization.
Rationalization, that's the word I was looking for.
But, I mean, we talk about how he's trying to incite other people's beliefs, and Stryker had his beliefs in the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we feel, like, about Stryker's personal motivations in these?
So his motivations, I think...
They're both related around his son,
but,
right?
But in the movie, I think his drive is... It's out of, like... vengeance. He feels like
he has a vendetta with Charles, almost.
Yeah. Because I think the son ended up killing his wife or something.
Yeah, the son was an illusion maker. Like, he could go in your mind and create illusions, and the son drove the mother crazy until the mother bore her head open.
Yeah.
And in this we find out that Stryker just... The baby came out with thorns, was it, or something? What was it? But the baby came out weird, and so he's like,
yeah,
well, I killed the baby, and then I killed the mother, because the mother gave birth to an aberration, therefore she was an aberration.
And it was somebody, God was telling him, sending him a message that he needs to go kill all, no.
kill all robots.
Kill I was all thinking of Bender.
Kill all humans.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, what do I think about each one of those? I don't know. They're both bad guys.
Well, I mean,
I don't think either of them is. I don't think either of them is good. I think that the movie chose wisely for what it was, what its goal was as a as a money making proposition, right?
Well, I think they both are affected, right? Like with the movie, I like that there it's a lot easier to relate to Stryker on a human level, right? Like he raised his son. He understood that his son was a mutant and was going to be persecuted, and it was a problem for him and his family. So he heard about Charles Institute, and he said, well, I'll send my son there, and he'll get cured, you know? And then, but that get cured part is what's wrong. And then when the son comes back, all the shit goes down, and the mother dies, and so Stryker's like, what the fuck? And almost sort of blames that on Charles. I mean, there's a path of events there that you can kind of follow. There's a couple tricks, right? Like the get cured, which is kind of like when Christian gay kids get sent to straight-making camps to get cured of their gaydom. You know, like, there's a wrongness in that. You can't cure mutation, you know? And so it has that function of having you almost relate to his trauma. It brings you closer to him and his character. Whereas in here,
makes him more of a sympathetic villain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But in this, it's just so hardcore, it makes you realize this guy doesn't just casually hate mutants. He, like, hates them down to his core.
Well, and see, the difference is, too, right? In the movie, it was a personal vendetta with Charles. Like you said, this, he's pulling people to his cause. He has a rally in Madison Square Garden, and he has a team of people called Purifiers. I don't think there were any people called Purifiers in the movie. Stryker had some soldiers, but I think we got the notion that he was, like, kind of a rogue military guy.
Yeah. I haven't seen this movie a long time, so I'm, like, trying really hard to remember what happened clearly. But
so then let's talk about the character that doesn't exist in both of them. What about Anne, the main lieutenant of Stryker's, the Purifier woman leader?
She didn't deserve to die.
The whole time I was like, man, this bitch is hardcore. Like, she is. This is like almost her crusade as much as it is Stryker's. Because, what is it? They have a couple bodies, you know? And the Purifiers.
It's Cyclops and.
It's Cyclops and who else
and
was
Storm.
It? And Storm. And the Purifiers are like, oh, we're just going down to incinerate these bodies. And she's like, cool, I'll join you. Like, that is fucked up. Yeah, cool, I want to go watch some mutants burn. Holy
well, she's
shit.
A total. I mean, obviously, she's a zealot.
Yeah, she's. I think she's as bad as Stryker, if not worse.
Well, that's why she's her. She's his right hand person.
But then she gets her tragic fall. What did you guys think of that scene? I mean, I don't say fall as a pun.
Well, so I thought it was. Let me. I don't know. I thought it was kind of like, oh, surprise, she's a mutant. It's like, okay, I guess that's acceptable.
I'm glad she got to see the Reverend for what he was. I didn't like that he pushed her and actually killed her. I would have been happier if he, like, attacked her and she didn't die and she was like, oh, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good symbol of how these people don't fully understand what they're doing. They think they do, but they don't really understand what they're doing to the people that they're doing it to. And then right as she's about realizing it, and she asks for help, right? Doesn't she say help me or something like that?
Yeah.
Or spare me or something along those
she's
lines.
She's begging him not to attack
yeah,
her.
And in that moment, I think he casts her away. And I don't know if he meant to kill her. I don't think he meant to.
I think he did. He's been calling for their deaths the whole time, and he has no problem killing small children.
Yeah, he even says a true daughter of heaven would have accepted her faith. That's his quote. Right before he pushes her.
Like she should have just known to kill herself as soon as she finds out. Like,
and then he says, your resistance reveals your true allegiance, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, he calls her He calls her Mutant Hellspawn also. So, yeah.
I mean, but...
And he says, I cast you forever into the abyss.
But and then he shoves her off. I think part of me thinks is that he wants to kill these people, but I don't think he wants to do it by his own hands.
I think you're giving him too much credit.
No, because this whole comic, I don't think we ever actually see him kill a mutant.
But he does it right there. He says, mutant Hellspawn, I deny you.
Right, but
I cast you forever into the abyss. Think about what forever means to Christianity.
Okay. But I think in this moment, it's a mistake. I think he was meaning to shove her off and let the crowd handle her. The same way he wanted to let the crowd handle Magneto.
I don't think so, Andy.
The thing is, when you are mega rich and you have a bunch of minions to do the killing for you, why would you get your hands dirty if you're just some weird, frail man?
Because if you have true zealot hatred, you want to go watch them burn too. You want to go say, cool, I'll come. The same way that Anne did.
He very well might do that.
But he does. He does want them. He was inciting the crowd to kill Magneto while he watched.
Right, but he was not down in the crowd with them. I'm not, like, coming to his defense. I just don't know that he meant to kill her. I just don't know that that's what he meant to do.
Well, he wasn't trying to, like, cuddle her down to the floor so she could get attacked by
No, I think she was going to shove her off and break a leg or whatever, and then the crowd would kill her or something. But it seems awful coincidental that she falls just right to break her own neck.
It was quite a fall, though.
Yeah.
It's like 12 feet or something, wasn't it? He was up on a really high
platform. Yeah, it's like four of these squares high.
Yeah. Don't you know the more faithful you are, the higher you have to be above the flock?
Apparently.
That's like Black Adam style?
Yes. Always above the flock.
I think I'd have less of a problem with this guy if he was Black Adam.
But, you know, I am glad that she is the one that was immune. Because when he turns on the machine, I kind of got a feeling. Somebody that wasn't a mutant before is going to be revealed to be a mutant. And, like, okay, it could be some guy in the crowd, right? And then maybe the crowd sees the blood come out and goes, oh, God, you're a mutant! And then turns and beats the crap out of him, right? Like, there's that kind of scene that can happen. The worst thing would have been if Stryker were revealed to be a mutant. That would have been...
That
would have been eye-rolling, you know? So I'm kind of glad that it was her, because that has a sense of poignancy to it, but not...
I wonder what her power is that she didn't notice until now.
Right, it can't have been too bad.
Maybe she has super zealotry powers. She's super gullible.
That's, like, worse than pretty much anything we've seen so far.
That's why she's like, oh, you guys are going to do something? I want to do it. Doesn't matter what they're doing. They just happen to be incinerating bodies.
I just want to hang out with my friends. Do hood rat stuff. Oh, God. Burning bodies is not hood rat stuff. So what... The other thing I want to talk about, because there's that scene, which I think looks awesome, of her falling off the podium. I really did like the framing and the art in this comic.
Yeah, there's actually one shot that I loved it. I think it's actually towards the beginning of when Stryker's giving his speech. There's a shot where, it might not be, but, oh yeah, it is. So, it's where Stryker, the whole field of the panel is black, and you can just see Stryker's face and hair and his corsage and stuff.
Yeah.
But his suit, his jacket, like, blends into the background because it's all black. I just thought that was an awesome panel.
No, that was a really good panel. I really like the cinematic style of the framing. Like, at the end, where Stryker is got his gun out, and then he gets shot. Like, that's straight out of a movie, that scene, where you got the gun, you go back, you go forth, there's the tension, it's building. You're not looking at the gun, you hear bam. And then you see the blood coming off Stryker. Like, that's straight out of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it translates so well into this medium. It doesn't... I mean, I relate to it and being a movie that way, because I've seen that happen in so many movies, but it feels really organic in this comic too. And the other one that's like that is when Storm is in the tower.
Yeah.
And she's captured and she's like in the middle of yelling something, and then ka-chunk, it closes, and then you just see a thunderbolt.
Yeah, that was cool.
I appreciate that her powers were even when she was in there, because it's like, it kind of shows you how strong she is, yet how helpless at the same time.
Because she's restrained, she can't maybe funnel it the way that she normally could, but goddammit, she's captured and pissed, and there's a thunderstorm out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Are there any other scenes that you like, Jen?
Ooh. I like when Magneto comes in and...
His entrance?
Yeah, well, everyone's like, I don't know what... And I think you wrote this in the notes, actually, but he goes, I don't know what to do. That's what they have the moral Cyclops dilemma. Says. Should right?
We can't kill him. What do we do? I don't know. I don't
it's so
know.
So hard.
We're talking about all this moral stuff.
And then suddenly, Magneto rips the roof off the building. Floats down. He descends from the heavens.
Yes. He doesn't rip it off, though, because remember the two, like, audience members are talking about it? Yeah, he puts it back, and the guy's like, he's just making an entrance.
Yeah.
I thought that was great that they focused on some of the, like, bystanders. Yeah. You know, these two senators, or the senator and his aide, and the two police officers who were, like, doing crowd control.
Yeah. The officers were great. I love the officer. They're like, dude, come on, he's sick. Back the fuck up. Don't make me shoot.
Yeah, and then they end up being, like, the police officer ends up being the hero.
Yeah.
A level-headed, like, person. I mean, he shoots a dude, but he does his job as a police officer, right? Mm-hmm. There's an armed man that's going to kill teenagers, and he does what he needs to do as a cop. Yep. It's not his job to pass judgment on what's going on between these two factions, but it is his job to protect people.
Mm-hmm.
And the mutants are still people, and I think that's a good... I think that's actually, like, a good way that it, like, drives everything home, right? It's like this human who is... His position is to protect other humans, other people. He does just that by protecting the X-Men from a guy with a gun.
And I appreciate, too, that the whole time he's protecting Magneto right before that, right? Because I think it's the same cop, or even better if it's a different cop, because I think too often in these comics we see... All the humans are so angry and hate the mutants, and there's nothing but bigotry, and then these poor, you know, these poor belabored mutants. And actually, you know, yeah, it sucks. It's awful that people are persecuting them. There are also good people in the world who mm-hmm. would not stand for that shit, and we so rarely see them, whereas this guy... You know, Magneto is known as a villain. He's known as a terrorist. He... takes the roof off a building and comes down from the sky. That's gotta freak people out, and the cop's like, hey, no, he hasn't done anything. You can't hurt him. We're not gonna let you hurt him. And the cop risks his own safety to save someone who is often labeled as evil. And I'm like, that's a good guy. And you gotta have people like that in these comics, too. Because mm-hmm. it's not like everyone's just evil and bigoted. There's a mix of humans.
Yeah, and that works so well. I hadn't even thought about that, about how the cop is the one who resolves the situation and saves the lives, and is the one who kills Stryker. Because the X-Men always have that demo, do we kill them? Can we find a better way? What do we do here? What's the right resolution? And because they always try so hard to be above whatever situation they're at, right? And then Magneto makes his entrance, he doesn't give a damn, he's just gonna fuck with everybody. But, I mean, for the police officers, it's very clear-cut. Like you said, his job is to protect people. This man has a gun. He is pointing it at a person. He has clear intent to kill that person. I need to prevent that. Like, it just... It breaks all of this debate down to a super fundamental level. That one thing. Just, this is one person trying to harm another person. And it doesn't matter. Like you said, factions, religion... Mutant, whatever, it does not matter. It's one person trying to harm another, and motherfucker will not stand for that.
Yeah, this, and so it's actually like, now that I look through the panels again, all the cops seem to have that same attitude. Because one of them shoots the police officer, and someone in the crowd calls out, that cop shot the Reverend, and he says, yep, who was about to shoot an unarmed little girl. If that's the word of God, it sure changed some since Sunday school. And so, I don't know, it does what you said too, Andy, and it also shows that the X-Men are so, you know, they maintain their moral high ground even at the risk of their own life, right? Because Cyclops is standing there, he could have just blasted the Reverend to nothing, and they put their lives on the line to show that they are willing to... You know, take the moral high ground, right? There, mm-hmm. we spend, you know, the X-Men are known as like an action fighting team, right? But So it's easy to forget that that's not the way they want to go first. And so, I don't know, this was a really good ending to a comic.
Yeah, it felt satisfying, to me at least.
Well, man, it sounds like we were like this one a lot more than last week. Which is weird, because it's the same writer, it's the same kind of era.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that necessarily... I mean, that just shows that people, you know, it depends on what they're writing about. I think the thing about this, God Loves, Man Kills, the thing about it is we talk about comics as a medium a lot, but this is a graphic novel. It's within continuity, but it's not in a particular timeline, necessarily. Yeah. I mean, it's considered part of continuity, but there's not, like, a clear-cut space for it in Uncanny X-Men 1, 3, whatever. Not like it happens
between this number and this number, insert here.
Right, because it's kind of confusing based on who the characters are, right? Because if you think back to what we read last week, Scott leaves and then Shadowcat joins. But in this, they're both on the team, without Jean Grey. So it's obvious, it's after the Dark Phoenix, but when is it? Because they're on the team at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And so, because it's in this tight package, it's like, here's the beginning and here's the end, it's easy for him to come up with a good ending, right?
Yeah.
There's a beginning and there's an end point, and...
Yeah, especially with what seems like, whatever the conceit was for when, I don't remember, when were last week's comics published? Can't have been too much earlier than this.
It was like 89, I think.
Really, was it after 80, this one?
80, sorry.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was 1980. But like, the conceit of every week having to recap a little bit, move on, and within the story recapping, it's almost like this was written for a different audience, an almost smarter audience.
Well, it's a standalone format too, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have to worry about serial continuity.
Yeah, you don't have to have a 30-page retrospective on why Scott's leaving when it's not going to matter for the next 5 issues.
Yeah. It was 81.
81, okay. So yeah, this one only came a year after Days of Future Past. Man, that Chris Claremont guy, he was good. Because it was Dark Phoenix, and then Days of Future Past, and then the next year he wrote this.
Well, he wrote X-Men not a bad for a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah, this I do know. Well, I don't know. I don't feel like I have a whole lot more to say.
I'd kind of like to talk about it.
Okay.
Because I think it stands out from 80s art. This almost feels like retro. I know it's kind of weird to say, like, something from the 80s is retro, because it's only, like, 30 years after retro itself. But it's actually high-quality shading, I thought. It looks like they did almost, like, the watercolor markers that you sometimes see, and the way that they colored everything had kind of that old 1950s comic-y vibe, but I felt it was higher quality. Did you guys kind of get that, or did it just feel like 80s comic art to you?
I think stylistically it was 80s, like the character designs and things like that, but I think the way that the art was used was a lot more effective in this than in the normal in a monthly, because we both talked about scenes that we thought really stood out well, and the way that the panels were used cinematically, and maybe that was because they didn't have the same time constraints to get the comic published in a certain amount of time, right?
Yeah, you can work on having higher quality when it's a standalone.
And this wasn't the same artist that Chris Claremont usually worked with on X-Men, because it was John Byrne, I think, that worked with Claremont for a lot of it, and this was somebody else.
Brent Anderson.
So, maybe that's why.
And Wikipedia tells me that originally Neil Adams was supposed to do this one, and then they decided to go somewhere else. Which is good, because eventually that led to Neil Adams making a Batman Odyssey, so... I don't know how they're correlated at all, but I really want to finish reading Batman Odyssey.
Yeah, maybe if Neil Adams had written this, it would have opened with a shirtless Stryker eating a banana in the Batcave.
No, it would have been Wolverine. Wolverine would have been great. Because already know he has the hairy. Yeah.
Man, I'm looking at Wikipedia. Claremont he wrote X-Men for 17 years.
Jesus.
And he co-created Rogue, Psylocke, Shadowcat, Phoenix, Mystique, Lady Mastermind, Emma Frost, Siren, Jubilee, Rachel Summers, Madeline Pryor, and Sabretooth, Avalanche, Strong Guy, Captain Britain, Mr. Sinister, and Gambit.
Wow. Prolific.
Yeah. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's actually... Maybe I just think they're some of the best X-Men because they were the ones so prevalent in my childhood, but, like, a lot of the ones you listed there are the ones I consider, like, the coolest.
Yeah.
And the other ones I can think of that I really like are the ones that are probably before his time, like Blob. I think Blob was a Stan Lee creation. Like one of the older villains.
Yeah, I'm not exactly, I don't know.
The Blob. I love the Blob.
Nothing stops him.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Except ice. Because really? In the cartoon, in the Days of the Future Past cartoon, they're fighting on the National Mall in front of, like, the Washington Monument. And Blob gets in the little lake thing, you know, in front of, like, that's between Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah.
And Storm freezes him and he's stuck.
Oh, well, ice stops the Blob.
Okay. Well, because he's like waist deep in water, and then it gets frozen, and he can't get out. And then Pyro and Avalanche are defeated by slipping on the ice.
Yay, wow. Cartoons!
A guy who can create earthquakes and another guy who create fire are defeated by ice.
How would the fire guy get defeated by? Oh, stupid. Anyway. I don't know. Do we have anything else we want to talk about? I feel bad because this comic is really good.
This is always what happens when we read things we really like.
I know.
Is it's easy to talk about it and we get all of our ideas out and then.
And then there's nothing to talk about. It's just, yeah. All you can sit here and talk about how awesome it is.
Let's rate it.
Okay, I'll go first. I'm going to give it a 4. 4. I was going to go 4.5 before.
Okay.
I don't know why.
That's what you feel in your heart.
Yeah. The power of art gives me a 4. The art's amazing. The writing's really good. I think we've talked about almost everything. I think this is one of the better X-Men comics that we've read. And I think, like you mentioned, David, I think it's because it's a graphic novel format. You know, you can sit and you can refine the story. You don't have to worry about working on that monthly schedule. You don't have to worry about pumping something out every 30 days.
You don't have to worry about continuity, necessarily.
Yeah. I think it's really good. I think there's a couple weird points, like, I don't know, I always can do with less Shadow Cat, but I know she's popular. Like, the swimming through the earth kind of stuff was a little weird. I think they do a lot to, when they have defensive people like that, you have to go out of your way to make them useful. But, you know, that's here nor there. That's just something with the character. That's not anything with the story for Chris Claremont. But yeah, 4. I really love... You know, the story's good, but the art is what really makes this work for me. Just the cinematic style and you know how you mentioned the one panel that sticks out where he was all, like, it's all black and the shirt? That one stuck out for me, but the other one that stuck out a lot in my head was when the panel's all white and they're talking about how mutants are human, right? And Stryker says, "You dare to call that thing human?" And he points back to Nightcrawler. And it's just, like, all white, and Nightcrawler just sitting there. He looks so sad.
Yeah, he's kind of mopey.
I know, it's like, oh my god, you're right, but that's so depressing. Like, he looks nothing human at all. But you know he is. And Nightcrawler knows he is, and he's so sad. But, like, stuff like that, just quick little things are done really, really well with the art. So, yeah, 4. How about Jen goes next?
4.5. And I actually... didn't waffle on this. I decided on that when I was reading it earlier this week. I just thought it was really well done in presenting the main theme of X-Men, which I think is racism. Like, as a whole, like, X-Men as a whole. But it did it well. I mean, there were some good people, there were some bad people, there were a lot of ignorant people. And I mean, that's how that usually works. So... I thought that there was nothing too, like, comic bookish in here that made it non-plausible as a story. And I thought the characters were developed well and interesting. Because, like, oh, especially, we didn't talk about this too much, when Stryker kills his son, we talked about the movie deal. In here, he's just like, it was a monster and I killed it because that's how it works. And it's like, at first you think, oh, they're gonna develop some pity for this dude with me. And then it's like, no, he's evil.
He really is just that fucked up.
And it's interesting to see a character developed like that, where he's not mustache twirly evil. He's just, like, barest pit of hell evil.
Just zealot. I mean, I think David's the one who used the word zealot first,
and that's totally zealot is perfect. So, I thought he was a really good villain because he could be anybody who is an asshole. I mean, not anybody, but he could be just a normal guy. It doesn't have to exist. So yeah, 4.5. Mm-hmm.
David?
Yeah, I'm also gonna give this a 4. You guys said it's a really good comic. No, I think, like Jen said, if you haven't read any X-Men ever, and you're like, what's X-Men all about? This is a good comic to read.
Yep.
It puts it right out there, introduces you to some core characters, and it's really well written.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned, Andy, that there were parts where it was a little heavy-handed, but I think it was kind of appropriate in the way that it handled that. Because like you said, you know, Shadowcat is a teenager and she doesn't really have the same filters, so when she talks, she shot from the hip or whatever that cliche is. I don't even know if
that's my boss's favorite cliche, and I don't think she knows what it means. She always says, that person shoots from the hip, and I'm like, do you know?
Isn't that like when a gunslinger like just pulls their gun out of their holster and shoots from there?
Yeah. It's like, but like in like interpersonal conversation just means that, like, they don't filter. They just say immediately what comes to their mind. They just spit things out immediately.
So, yeah, like, and for 80s art, usually I have a hard time with the art from that era, like Silver Age art.
Yeah, because usually the paper's crappy quality and the coloring sucks.
Yeah, they can just with digital art nowadays, they can do a lot better. But, yeah, this is a really, really good comic, so 4.
Cool. So now that we're done rating it, and I was going through the notes, I just noticed there's a thing that I did want to talk about this week, and maybe we can talk about it more next week. But there's a thing where Stryker, like, wants to purify humanity by getting rid of all the mutants, right? But the way I understand it, it's like a spontaneous thing, right? Like, just two non-mutant people can have a kid, and the kid can be a mutant, right?
Yes.
Just the way evolution works.
It's a congenital condition.
Yeah. So it's not like if he so even if he kills all the mutants that are in existence today, there's nothing stopping another mutant from being born next week.
Right. Well, that's what's that? It's Messiah Complex was a X-Men arc from a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
where it was after Scarlet Witch had killed most of the mutants. She didn't kill them, they just lost their powers. And one hadn't been born for a while, and then one is born in Alaska, and, like, everybody shows up to kill the baby, and the purifiers show up. And they, like, destroy the whole town trying to kill this little baby.
Jesus.
But Cable saves her. It's Cable.
Cable does that. He knows what's up. Cool. So, yeah, we can talk about that a bit more next week, too. I think it'll be prevalent for next week. And speaking of which, next week we are reading New X-Men Volume 1, which is kind of confusing because I think it's just the beginning of Grant Morrison's run on New X-Men.
Yeah.
So it's actually New X-Men number 114 to number 126, and New X-Men Annual 2001.
It's considered number 1.
Number 1, okay. And this comic's from 2001, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So like I said, that's by Grant Morrison. That'll mean next week. If you want more information about that, you can hit up our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. You can ask us directly over email,
which is atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And you can hit us up on the social medias. That's like twitter.com/APSupercast, facebook.com/APSupercast. And as always, subscribe to us on
iTunes.
There you go. Or
I was worried you were going to leave me out of the outro.
No, I'm not going to leave you out. I was kind of hoping that when I pointed to you, everyone's expectation would have been to get iTunes, and you would have said, Stitcher Radio! But I still don't know if we work on there. I need to triple check that.
I put the app on my phone, and then it's, like, really hard to navigate, so I deleted the app. But now I get emails from them. It's like, your weekly update of recommended Stitcher podcasts, and it's like...
I only have one recommended podcast, and it's mine.
There's some conspiracy out there where everybody's trying to make it really hard for me to get podcasts.
Aww.
Have you seen the way Apple handles podcasts now on the iPhone?
No.
There's a podcast app that you have to download, and it sucks.
Aww. That's annoying.
It's real fucking annoying.
Speaking of real fucking annoying, next week, new X-Men.
Yes.
Until then, everybody.
Goodbye.